Company culture. Have you heard that term recently or in the past? It's become a buzzword and for good reason. In fact, there's even a famous quote about what company culture eats for breakfast. I'm not going to tell you what that is, but you can Google it. But Chuck Violin's with me today, and he's someone that knows a little bit about company culture. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jeff. Nice to be back.
Good to have you back. We're going to talk about the subject of chapter three in your book, which is Forging Dynasty Businesses. In fact, the title of your chapter three is pretty simple, isn't it?
Yep. We
Company
try to.
culture. So let's set this up. Define company culture for us, according to Chuck Violand.
According to Chuck Veolin, it's got to be good. There's a lot of different ways to define it, Jeff. But to begin with, every company has a culture. Okay, it's born the day that the owner starts the business, and it's really based on that owner's beliefs, values, and what they bring to the company. It has to do with the way that they interact. At the beginning, when there's no employees, it has to do with the owner's interaction with customers, with vendors, business partners. It's going to reflect their style. It's going to reflect their beliefs about money, competition, all of those things. That's the starting point on that of the culture. Then, as the company grows and employees are added, then it starts to include all the people within the organization. So a company's culture really embraces a set of values, a set of beliefs that not only the owner, but also the people in the organization embrace, and how those play out both in their management of the business, even as much as the strategy of the business and the customers that they decide to go after or the markets they decide to pursue. It's all of those things. While it includes the vision, the mission, the core values, it's not just limited to that. It has to do with style. It has to do with the way that the people communicate with each other, with the way that they collaborate, with the way that they trust each other. So in the grand scheme of things, it can be a reflection of how the company interacts, how they approach customers, how they approach business, money philosophies. All of those things get rolled into the culture of the business. Even trust, that plays into it as well.
Very good. In chapter three, I noticed you wrote a little box called A Tale of Two Cultures. That's a pretty good read. Can you dig into that and tell us what that teaches us?
Jeff, in the book, with just about every chapter, maybe even every chapter, we tell a story about a client or a client company that illustrates the point we're trying to make in that particular chapter. Now, we don't use their names. We don't use the name of the company, so that's all protected. But nonetheless, we're talking about actual incidents because this is where we got our research. In this particular chapter, though, we didn't select just one particular instance with a client. This was a combination of different clients. And it really highlighted two radically different types of cultures. One of them is a more, I'll use the word repressive, more command and control environment. And in this particular one, it's based on an owner whose decisions really are ego-driven. They tend to not hire people who are smarter than them because they enjoy being the smartest person in the room. So they don't want to feel threatened by that. As you might imagine, this involves all of the hiring decisions. It involves really the decisions that are being made in the business because they're being made based on how that owner, since they're ego-driven, they're being based on how that owner is going to look or feel after those decisions are made. Now we contrast that with the second story, and that is one that is more, I'll use the word enlightened, maybe progressive in their style of running the business. This is an organization where the owner has decided to delegate both responsibility but also authority to the people in their organization, and then providing them with the tools to achieve the things that they have agreed that they want to achieve in the business. Now, in that second group, the second company, you know, the way that they resolve issues, because problems are always going to come up, but there's an absence of blame. They don't blame somebody for the mistake or the problem, but rather they work to get to the root cause of the problem, and then they work together to resolve it. Now, Jeff, I'm going to tell you that over and over, what we've discovered in the last 36 years of working with clients is that those companies that, like the first one, that are more regressive or they're more ego-driven, they underperform. In other words, they deliver results, profitability among them, much less than they could. Whereas in those businesses that are more progressive and that look to rely on the people in their organization, attract good people that complement the skills of the owner, those are the ones who really flourish, and they perform much better than the ones than the other ones.
I like what you said earlier about how some business owners are afraid to hire someone smarter than them.
Oh, yeah.
That's a crazy thought. Everyone I've hired is smarter than me. I don't know about you.
Oh, I can assure you that's exactly the case here, Jeff. Absolutely.
All right. So we're on limited time, but I think those watching this might want to know, what can they do in the short term to create the best company culture? What you describe obviously takes a lot of time, but what are some quick things they could do?
Yeah. That's a tough one. And I hope that all of the viewers here aren't looking for cheap, necessarily quick fixes to things in a culture, because I'm not convinced that there are any, or even keeping a culture going. The one thing that is clear is that growing a culture requires hard work. I'm not a gimmick kind of guy. So my personal opinion is that beer parties on Friday afternoons, or occasionally bringing in bagels in the morning, they're nice and they're fun. I'm not convinced though that they do a whole lot to build a healthy culture or to maintain a healthy culture. If you don't pay attention to the fundamentals of growing a culture, and all you're doing are gimmicks, before long, people get onto it and they view it with cynicism, which is never good. So my advice to either growing or maintaining a healthy culture, it's a simple formula. It's not easy, but it's a simple formula. And it involves asking, listening, acting, and then strapping in, because it's a long run. So let's hit those individually, Jeff. Asking. What I mean here is, ask your people what they're looking for. What would they think would make a healthier culture or a more engaging culture? Ask them about the things that concern them. Ask them about ideas that they have for improving things, even if it's their own job, the things that they're doing in the business. And don't just ask one question. Ask two questions. Go deeper, ask three questions. One of the things you might discover in asking the questions is what Krista Tippett, we were talking about podcasters before, Krista Tippett states, when she says that answers rise to the quality of the questions that are asked. The better you get at asking questions, the better the answers are that you're going to get. The second one has to do with listening. And here I don't mean just listen so that you can respond to it. Listen to understand. If you need clarity in one of the answers that you got, ask again for clarity and listen to the answers that they give. It's critical that we do that. The third one is to act. And act means following through on the things that you learned in the conversation with your people. They're going to let you know the things that they think would improve the organization. So act on those things that you can, and let them know about the ones that you can't act on. Nobody's asking you to execute on everything, every recommendation that they bring. But everybody in your organization wants to know that they have the ear of the owner, regardless of the level that they're on, and that you care about their concerns and you're doing something about them. And then the last one is strapping in. It's a long ride, Jeff. Building a culture is not easy. And so it's a long road. You need to be prepared for a long run on that, especially when it comes to maintaining a culture. It's messy, but you can do it.
That listen to understand is interesting, because I've seen quotes about that, because some say people just listen to respond. Like,
oh, yeah.
what am I going to say to what Chuck tells me? So yeah. That's good advice. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that was a lot of stuff. Not easy, not short term, but I think those watching this program are looking for the long term and the substantial growth and company culture that will help them with that. But Chuck, we're about out of time. Any final words of advice for those watching?
Yeah. You know, as I mentioned just a moment ago, building a culture is messy business. Okay. It requires a ton of work, and it requires us. It can be frightening, because it requires us to think differently, and it requires us to do things differently. And here I'll play the age card. Those of us who are a little bit older and running businesses, I think that it can be especially difficult for us, because it does require us to think differently. But I can tell you this, Jeff, that when you do it, it causes those of us who are a little bit older to stay young and to stay on our toes. And in my opinion, that alone is worth it.
Yeah.